Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Scales of Truth. You know, this Fox News stuff is a real pivot. Again, I hope you guys see the fox in lamb's clothing or the wolf in sheep's clothing, the fox in sheep's clothing, whichever way you want to look at it. You could look at it both. One's like, look, we're a fox. No, you're a lamb. You're not being courageous. You're not watching out for any of us. And another is, well, are you a wolf in fox clothing? Because you're just a disguised another threat, right? I know that analogy doesn't work great. But because of that, you know, last episode I talked about Tucker Carlson. And I mentioned a lot here. He's going to say some things in a little bit more educated way. I mean, I've never, you know, worked at the Heritage Foundation. I think a lot. I come up with some very unique angles. But he's going to come up and say some things in a unique way versus what I would. And I think it's worth listening to. In essence, this just goes right along with these people who keep thinking that everything that's happening is anything except just the further introduction of chaos. It is the purposeful introduction of chaos. And then unfortunately what happens when chaos is introduced, you have people on the right and the conservatives, and Tucker, like me, doesn't particularly identify with being a Republican because, and I'll quote him, because ugh. All right. I mean, I'd like them to be what they say they are, but they just can't get out of their own way with trying to negotiate with people whose purpose is to introduce chaos. As Tucker would say, you know, that basically introducing chaos, there's no policy goal there. It instead is just evil. So when you think you can win an argument, well, if I just marshal the right facts, well, they can make, no, you're introducing chaos. I told you guys this. When Trump won, I said immediately, I don't know that I said it. I don't think I had quite started this podcast yet, but he better be waiting to get impeached because he will be. And he was impeached twice, both of them garbage. And now he's being legally terrorized more and with misdemeanors. And this is further introduction of chaos. Chaos is disorder. Tucker would say that. And now, you know, 3.25 years, we were fine. Yeah, the people complained about how he's too, you know, he's too vulgar. He's too unrefined in his speech. But overall, we are good. Construction going up everywhere. Things going okay. March of 2020, everything changes. And after that, it's been introduction of chaos after introduction of chaos. And the willing idiots on the left, who are not a part of the movement, but instead just fall for the movement, are so into the idea of, well, whatever it takes, at least Trump shouldn't get reelected because that'll be horrible. Well, how horrible has it been for 3.25 years? Because your 9 months of the 3.25 years was much, much worse, times 100 than anything Trump did, and except that he was stupid enough to go along with it. And that's a level of stupidity that, you know, at first you can forgive. You'd hope. I mean, Tucker Carlson would have gone along with it. But that's one thing for the first 3 months to go along with it, but he's gone along with it for 3 years now. That's Trump's fault. That's Trump's problem. He's gone along with it for 3 years. He has not admitted his mistake. He has not talked about, he's talked otherwise about the introduction of chaos, and that's all it is, people. Chaos to bring our system down. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and let you hear Tucker Carlson's speech. I can't tell where it is. Maybe he came back and visited at the Heritage Foundation. I'll start that.
It might be time to start to reassess the terms we use to describe what we're watching. So when I started at Heritage, the presumption was, and this is a very Anglo-American assumption, that the debates we're having are kind of rational debates about the way to get to mutually agreed upon outcomes. Right, so like we all want the country to be more prosperous and free and people to be less oppressed or whatever, and so we're going to argue about tax rates, and I think higher tax gets us there. I'm a Keynesian, and you disagree, you're an Austrian or whatever. but the objective is the same. And so we write our papers and they write their papers and may the best papers win. I don't think that's what we're watching now at all. I don't think we're watching a debate over how to get to the best outcome. I think that's completely wrong. And I've come to this conclusion, not, and I should say at the outset, I'm an Episcopalian, so don't take any theological advice from me, because I don't have any. I grew up in the shallowest faith tradition that's ever been invented. It's not even a Christian religion at this point. I say with shame. But I'm just saying this as an observer of what's going on. There is no way to assess, say, the transgenderist movement with that mindset. Policy papers don't account for it at all. If you have people who are saying, I have an idea, let's castrate the next generation. Let's sexually mutilate children. I'm sorry, that's not a political debate. What? It has nothing to do with politics. What's the outcome we're desiring here? An androgynous population? Is that really what we are arguing for that? I don't think anyone could like defend that as a positive outcome. But the weight of the government and a lot of corporate interests are behind that. Well, what is that? Well, it's irrational. If you say, well, I think abortion is always bad. Well, I think sometimes it's necessary. That's a debate I'm familiar with. But if you're telling me that abortion is a positive good, what are you saying? Well, you're arguing for child sacrifice, obviously. It's not about like, oh, a teen girl gets pregnant and what do we do about that? And victims of rape. I get it. Of course I understand that. And I have compassion for everyone involved. But when the Treasury Secretary stands up and says, you know what you can do to help the economy get an abortion? Well, that's like an Aztec principle, actually. There's not a society in history that didn't practice human sacrifice. Not one. I checked. Even the Scandinavians, I'm ashamed to say. It wasn't just the Mesoamericans, it was everybody. So, like, that's what that is. What's the point of child sacrifice? Well, there's no policy goal entwined with that. No, that's a theological phenomenon. And that's kind of the point I'm making. None of this makes sense in conventional political terms. When people or crowds of people, or the largest crowd of people at all, which is the federal government, the largest human organization in human history, decide that the goal is to destroy things, destruction for its own sake. Hey, let's tear it down. What you're watching is not a political movement, it's evil. So if you want to assess, non-specific theological terms, and just say, if you want to know what's evil and what's good, what are the characteristics of those? And by the way, I think the Athenians would have agreed with this. This is not necessarily just a Christian notion. This is kind of a widely agreed upon understanding of good and evil. What are its products? What do these two conditions produce? Well, good is characterized by order, calmness, tranquility, peace, whatever you want to call it, lack of conflict, cleanliness. Cleanliness is next to godliness. It's true. It is. And evil is characterized by their opposites. Violence, hate, disorder, division, disorganization, and filth. So if you are all in on the things that produce the latter basket of outcomes, what you're really advocating for is evil. That's just true. I'm not calling for a religious war, far from it. I'm merely calling for an acknowledgement of what we're watching, which is not one, and I'm not certainly not backing the Republican Party. I'm not making a partisan point at all. I'm just noting what's super obvious. Like, those of us who are in our mid-50s are caught in the past in the way that we think about this. One side's like, no, I've got this idea, and we've got this idea, and let's have a debate about our ideas. They don't want a debate. Those ideas won't produce outcomes that any rational person would want under any circumstances. Those are manifestations of some larger force acting upon us. It's just so obvious. It's completely obvious. And I think two things. One, we should say that and stop engaging in these totally fraudulent debates where we are using the terms that we used in 1991 when I started at Heritage, as if maybe, you know, I could just win the debate if I marshaled more facts. I've tried that, doesn't work. And two, maybe we should all take just like 10 minutes a day to say a prayer about it. I'm serious, like why not? And I'm saying that to you, not as some kind of evangelist, I'm literally saying that to you as an Episcopalian, the Samaritans of our time. I'm coming to you from the most humble and lowly theological position you can. I'm literally an Episcopalian, okay? And even I have concluded it might be worth taking just 10 minutes out of your busy schedule to say a prayer for the future, and I hope you will.
Turbo forces.
All right, so important comments on that. I mean, it stands for itself, but for emphases, because, you know, part of the chaos is that your words don't get to be a part of an honest discussion. That is part of the chaos that's introduced. No, your words will not be a part of an honest discussion. You did not come from proper motivations. You came from what I say you came from with your words. If I'm one of these disingenuous, really just purveyors of evil. But of all those things that happen, the point is not, oh, well, there shouldn't be any trans people. There shouldn't be any, you know, there shouldn't be any abortions. The point is that constantly these are the things that are introduced. And I had a hard time saying this on Kim's podcast. I tried once and could not quite figure out how to say it. It's that it becomes a policy question instead of just like, you know, as I've said many a times, the Ten Commandments work. As a libertarian, you go, well, but isn't it already illegal to assault a human? Isn't it? Because anybody who's trans or anybody who's gay is a human. And so we don't really need more laws to stop assaults. Well, two things for that. It federalizes things, right? Because hate crime, and you can't, then states can't deal with it because federal people come in. But then, two, what's happening there is that it's a mechanism by which the social policy argument, the destructive one that Tucker Carlson is talking about, occurs. It's that, well, if you talk about how the new group shouldn't be abused, and instead of it being inherently obvious that they shouldn't be, because it is, because they're humans, right? It's one thing to go, dude, you are freaking weird, but mostly keep to yourself. It's another thing to assault somebody, right? And those of us who are decent humans, who already, and yeah, he says Episcopalian, as you know, I don't attend church. I am spiritual in a way. I do believe in higher powers of some kind. I've not defined them anyway. I'm not sure how any organization can have such, I know why they must have, you know, doctrine documents, but I don't know how anybody can get to that point of being that specific as far as understanding the higher power. But, you know, if you believe that someone is not to be assaulted, and most of us do, and that there are laws for that already, it just becomes so foreign to hear this ridiculous idea. Like, did you see the heavy, he looked like a cross dresser to me, but he was like, man, you try to keep me from going to the restroom. It'll be the last thing you do. Okay. You are coming up with a fake reason to be indignant and you don't even realize it. You're constantly creating new rights so that you can say your rights are challenged. You're just the new goth. It's not impressive. It's like, oh, how do I rebel? And listen, I know some of these people are being honest about it, but I guess let me get back to this point. If you're trans and all of a sudden you start talking about how trans rights should be protected, aren't they? Aren't they? And if the policy document is instead to further divide us by type, and so that we can then argue that it's the new civil rights over and over and over again, then that, as he said, that's not policy, that's not discussion, that's just evil. If the argument is not about freedom of speech. And to his point, you can't just argue the facts because you're not even supposed to talk about the facts. Not only is that evil, and then you get punished for the facts. More specifically, more pointedly, it is just tyrannical. And that's the word for it. I mean, any tyrannical regime says, no, you don't get to say that. Any tyrannical regime says you don't get to investigate that. Any tyrannical regime takes dissident journalists. You know who dissident journalists are? They're the ones who simply try to cover things without just supporting the ruler, just without question. They're the ones who cover problems in the society without just instead just supporting the ruler. And it's not in regard to whether the ruler decides that that's something that you get to talk about or not, because every ruler says, oh, it's good to talk about this societal ill, but not this one, and this one, and this one. And if you can't talk about all the societal ills in a because you're in a tyrannical society, guess what ones you don't get to talk about? The one that the tyrant says you don't get to talk about. January 6th, Dominion voting. You get to talk about one point of view. Ukraine possibly not being a country that everybody just should support, sacred cow. The fact that we're putting troops on the ground of some nature in Ukraine, you don't get to talk about that. You don't get to talk about that. And if you start to talk about it, you will soon get the picture that you do not get to talk about it. See us up here when we have a general or a chief of staff of some kind, Joint Chiefs of Staff, and you go, there are revelations that you guys actually, how is this not the Pentagon Papers? Tell me, how is it not the Pentagon Papers? What are your secret activities in the Ukraine? Well, can you imagine? It's supposed to be the most supported war in U.S. history, if you go by the lack of outrage by anybody politically in Washington. And with that most supported war in U.S. history, this introduction of chaos is, even with all the support, this billions in propaganda that we're using, and literally billions and billions we're sending and wasting our own defenses on the Ukraine when we could have had peace talks years ago, literally now. The most supported war, quote unquote, because that's what you have to say, right? Well, obviously, it's the most supported war. Put up your Ukraine. You have to be, you know what? If you have a Ukraine flag, unless you're on your car, God love you, but you're going to have to repent in order for us to be real friends. Because how could you not see when we went from 100% COVID, 100% vaccine support, and now 100% Ukraine, that it's just the same thing? How can you not understand that? It's 100% 0%. That's what's allowed. But yeah, here we are, 100% supported Ukraine war. Absolutely, we should send more and 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 more. That then behind the scenes, they said, but we shouldn't tell them about this. What? Well, they wouldn't understand. We're not in the middle of the Vietnam War. We're in the middle of a war that supposedly is supported as any war in American history. A proxy war. And then you don't tell us how involved we physically are? How is that not a hangable offense? How is Congress not at this moment writing up papers of impeachment for the president and anybody who else was involved? And I'm telling you, this is easy. Some Republicans on some security committee were in on it. Oh, well, the big psychological trick is for a tyrant to bring you in and make you a part of the decision. All right, guys, that's good stuff from Tucker Carlson. I got to say, I know I had a little bit of a rant to bring some threads together at the end, but that is true. I knew there was something about the way I was thinking of it I couldn't quite express. It's not that anybody can't be trans. It's that now becomes the political movement. You know, it and then this artificial argument that trans people aren't protected. People are protected. What are you talking about? And then is it really a social policy to take away rights from parents? What's the policy argument there? Generally,
Is it really a social policy argument to say, A, we know that adult brains are not really fully formed as to judgment until they're 25, knowing that as a basic underlying biological fact, and then also arguing, because you're not really arguing against the Heritage Foundation and which is better for society long term, you're just trying to sow chaos, knowing that brains are not fully formed until 25, but also 9-year-olds should be able to make decisions about their body being changed biologically. Is it really a social policy argument, or is it just sowing chaos when we know that bodies are vastly different? Testosterone, progesterone, and so on. All of these things, estrogen, are, you know, specific to your body type. Do you really think that given your biological body type, that it is smart to give the opposite hormone for the rest of your life? Or does that seem, a lot like a sales job so that somebody gets a subscription for the rest of their life? Do we really think that it's a policy argument after we set literally less than 5 to 10 years after we royally got passed it, quote unquote, because that ended up being a policy argument too, that not whether gay should be accepted because you shouldn't hurt people, but that it is of a great virtue. Okay. But after we say, because it's a great virtue, because if that is what you are, that is what you should be. Know what you are. Okay. And now it's like, do not accept yourself. Do not even accept your physical being. Instead, be so caught up in angst and gothiness. And I was told at 6 what sex is. And at 6, I still like boys. And now they're asking me who I like because I'm a little boy and I don't even know how to like girls yet. But I should be making the decision on whether I want to be a boy or a girl or who I like at this time. Yeah, like, brains that haven't even become politically wise yet are now being politically manipulated. That's not a policy argument. A policy argument is you educate the children. There's no policy argument to, we should make sure kids are as politically left or right as possible in the same place where we say we're just going to teach them basic facts and skills. That's not a policy argument. It's just the sowing of chaos. There's no, what's your policy for that? Well, there's going to be some small excuse, but it's always an illegitimate excuse, right? Like, well, kids need to know about sex. Well, no kidding. Do they need to know at 6? And that's far removed from whether you should be asking them what their gender is or whether, you know, should the school be involved? Is this really the argument? Should the school be involved with matters of free will and conscience, because your sexuality used to be that, you know, you figured it out, and now the school's into asking you about it and without your parents' permission and pushing you about it. And then after you go, I guess I like boys. Yes, you do. And don't you ever forget it. And it's like you put all this pressure as kids are learning the world. You don't back up that pressure with anything as a kid. You don't back up that pressure. You go, well, we'll see what they think when they're 17 to 20. And then when they're 25, you don't make it a big pivot point of importance for the entire school. What little Billy thought about whether he liked boys or girls when he was 6. So again, it's not a policy argument to say, if you are arguing, what we should do is use a kid's judgment and try to hold him to it for the rest of his life and then have adults arguing about it because we think it's very important what he thinks at the time. That's not a policy argument. That is the introduction of chaos. Or as Tucker put it, listen, it is what it is, but it is not policy. It is evil. It is, when you don't have a policy argument, when you are for disorder, when you are for disharmony, when you are for discord, when you are for changing things, I don't mean changing things for the long long term, when you are not for calm, you are for screaming about the next right that you bring up, then that's just for evil. It just is what it is. Okay, guys, thanks for listening. I'm Tyson Harley.